The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And it's a Friday. Yay! We made it this far. Well, some of us did anyway. A lot going on, as you would expect. And let me tell you what we have coming up today. It's a tradition. I just sort of piggyback on the tradition. Every year, for as long as I can remember, for as long as I've been paying attention, The Nation magazine puts together its year-end progressive honor roll. So they honor the people who made a difference in the previous year. Sometimes, sometimes it comes out the end of December, sometimes the beginning of January. Today is January 15th. Tells you, well, things have been a little busy and crazy lately. But the Nation put it up live on the website at thenation.com today, the 2020 Progressive Honor Roll. And John Nichols, it's a collective effort among, I guess, the writers, I'm guessing. The writers, the publishers, editors at The Nation magazine. But it's John Nichols' project. He pulls it all together every year. So and for I don't know how many years now, at least 10, I've invited John Nichols on my show, wherever it is, whether it was on WINZ in Miami, whether it was on Air America Radio or right here on my own thing. John Nichols has guested with me every year to pay tribute. So here's what, you know, my thought as I was going through the list, it's like, wow, this is great. This is really good. I'm going to be positive today. So I set up this little like challenge for myself, thinking I'm going to remain positive all day. And then I saw the tweet from Katie Porter. Now, we love Katie Porter. Katie Porter of course, California, Orange County. She got swept into office in the 2018 sort of blue wave, right? And she won what was a pretty red seat. And she's a progressive, and she's awesome. And she won her reelection very easily, probably in part because of her strong performances when she sat on the Financial Services Committee in the House. Yeah, sat being the operative word there. Be careful. I'm sorry. This is going to make you mad. She lost her seat on the House Financial Services Committee today because of Democratic caucus rules. Yeah. See, there. Here's her tweet. She wrote, so somebody else, Sylvan Lane, I don't even know who he is. He is a reporter, covers finance for The Hill. Okay. So he tweeted, news, Representative Katie Porter drove bank executives and industry-friendly regulators crazy during as a member. Okay, typo here. As a member of the House Financial Services Committee, she just lost her seat on the panel, thanks in part to Democratic caucus rules. And then Katie Porter jumps in and she says, procedural clarification. Under House Democratic rules, a member is allowed to serve on two non-exclusive committees. Mine are Oversight and Natural Resources. One can ask for a waiver for a third committee. I asked. Others in the same situation got waivers. I did not. I play by the rules. Nancy Pelosi could have given her the waiver. If there's one person who belongs on the House Financial Services Committee, it's Katie Porter. And this is just one more Pisces Bobby in the chat room is saying, can they waive that rule? Nancy Pelosi can. They waive it all the time. But I guess not for Katie Porter, because she makes the banksters too uncomfortable. In fact, I tweeted about this a little earlier. I was kind of pissed. And I wrote, this is almost criminal on Nancy Pelosi's part. And then I said, at Katie Porter, OC, you were the one person on that committee who held the banksters accountable. This is simply unacceptable. What can we do? Well, I didn't hear back from Katie Porter. But somebody named Matt responded, and he said, the problem is that Porter holds bankers accountable. Very uncomfortable for Pelosi. That saying, you know, that said, I'm going to push when the Democrats do things I don't like, the same way I push when Republicans do things I don't like. This is shooting ourselves in the foot. Katie Porter was the best voice we had on financial services to hold those banksters accountable. And Nancy Pelosi just removed her from that committee. Shame for shame. All right. Now I'll try to be positive. I was going to actually applaud Nancy Pelosi because she was on top of it yesterday and stuff is getting done. But this move, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. So let me move on. Something else that I've been frustrated about is the rollout of the vaccines or the lack thereof. Donald Trump did it again. Did what, you ask? He lied. And that should be no surprise because he is a liar. He is a prolific, habitual liar. Everything out of his mouth is a lie. I don't think he would be able to get through an hour. If you held out $1 billion, and you know how much he values the dollar, and said, I will give this to you. It'll help in paying off those hundreds of millions of dollars in debt you have hanging over your head the moment you exit the White House in 4 days, 19 hours, 1 minute and 5 seconds. And the reason it's one, oh, this is off. My clock is off. I gotta refresh. Because I have it set to 12:03 on Wednesday, the countdown clock. That's at NicoleSandler.com. Here, this is more like it. 4 days, 18 hours, 55 minutes, and 27 seconds. Because 12:03 is exactly what time Joe Biden should be raising his right hand and taking the oath of office. So that's we're counting down to the second. But even if you said to Trump, I will give you $1 billion, I'll pay off your debts, you just have to not lie for 1 hour. He couldn't do it. I know he couldn't do it. So what did he lie about this time? Well, this one's a whopper. Hold on. Let me see. Okay. He lied about the vaccines. Now, you knew this, right? Because where are my notes? Okay. A few days ago, I guess, Joe Biden, in talking about the fucked up rollout of the vaccines, what are they calling it? Operation Warp Speed? That's a joke. Nothing warp speed about it. Oh, and by the way, Biden's spokesperson announced today that they're going to phase that name out. Thank you. Thank you. Anyway, so Joe Biden said that when he gets in office, he'll immediately release the doses from the reserved stockpiles in order to get more people started on the two dose process. Right. So figuring the production is going on, they will roll them out. And by the time, you know, we get a whole bunch of people vaccinated, we'll get another batch in and we can go back and do the second shots. And then Alex Azar, who's Trump's Secretary of Health and Human Services, said, we'll do that, too. Just a couple of days ago. Right. He said, OK, well, we'll do that. We're going to do that now. We're going to release the reserves. And so officials in all the states are going, good, because we're out. We're waiting. And then they found out there was no there was nothing in the reserves. There was nothing left. They had already released them. And obviously, they didn't even know that. They didn't know that. So states are expecting all these shipments and the reserves are empty. So I guess it sounds like Donald Trump is leaving Joe Biden with the cupboards bare. Go figure. Anyway, so, you know, I got to tell you, down here in Florida, it's exactly what you figured it would be. It's a giant clusterfuck. Our governor, moron, death sentence, basically said, I'm just leaving it up to the counties. Whatever. I'll just, you know, we'll send the allocated amount to the counties and they can deal with it, which is what Trump did to the states. Yeah, we'll get it to the states and then it's their problem. I'm washing my hands of it. I got nothing to do with this anyway. And so it's the results that you would expect. So I'm here in Broward County. Governor death sentence said, you know what? Screw what the CDC is telling you, their guidelines. I know, you know, the frontline workers and stuff. Anybody over 65 can get a vaccine. So he didn't prioritize medical workers, doctors, nurses, EMS, ambulance driver. He didn't prioritize them. He just said, if you're over 65, first come, first serve. Really? That's why you saw the reports of old people sitting on their, you know, little fold up chairs, waiting in line overnight to get a shot. I live in Broward County. Broward County, the bluest county in Florida. And they have a BrowardCOVIDVaccine.com where allegedly you can go and sign up for an appointment. Well, my husband's over 65, so we want him to get vaccinated because he's the one who runs all our errands. I don't leave the house. He gets all masked up and gloved and face shield and everything, and he goes out into the world very safely, does the grocery shopping and stuff, and comes home where I'm safely ensconced with my little dog Jackson and my paints and my studio. Got everything I need right here. So I decided every morning I'm going to log on to this BrowardCOVIDVaccine.com site, and I'll be able to get in and make an appointment for him and myself too, by the way, because although I'm under 65, I am a lung cancer survivor and I'm down, you know, most of my left lung. So I have one of those underlying medical conditions. Now, I guess I need a doctor's note, which I can get. So when I log on to BrowardCOVIDVaccine.com, what comes up is the Florida Department of Health in Broward County has provided 26,465 COVID-19 vaccination appointments to individuals ages 65 and over. All appointments have been filled at this time. Please check back to this website often as more sites and appointments will be added over the coming days and weeks. Thank you. This website has appeared exactly the same for the past week. Week, yeah. So here we are. I have no illusions that we'll get it anytime soon. And Governor death sentence, to make matters worse, says, you know what? You don't even have to be a Florida resident. You don't have to show proof of residency. You come, first serve, come get a vaccine. So There's vaccine tourism going on because Ron death sentence has opened the entire state of Florida as if there's no virus here. We have one of the highest infection rates in the country and the death toll keeps going up. But he wants everything opened at 100% because death sentence and Florida. So people are coming down from New York. I've heard reports of Canada, although I don't know how Canada would work because I thought the borders closed, but maybe they're allowed to come in here. We're just not allowed to go there. But people are booking flights to Florida, or were, when the vaccines were available. Now they're not, so none of us gets it. So I'm just so thrilled to be here. I know I said I was going to be positive. All right, let me be positive. So Joe Biden, just a short while ago, spoke to the nation again. And I always feel like I have to qualify it. And you know what? I don't. Joe Biden at least has a plan. And actually, it's a good plan. Listen to this. He said that on his first day in office, he will instruct FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Association, to begin setting up federally supported community vaccination centers in places like gymnasiums, sports centers, and community centers. His administration will also use pharmacies and mobile vaccination clinics, as well as push for vaccination programs in high-risk settings like homeless shelters, jails, and centers for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And then, you know, he criticized the Trump administration's strategy of holding back nearly half of the available vaccines and said the current rollout had been too rigid and confusing. You think? I wonder if he already got, if he got the news that the half they held back isn't there. He said, quote, if you were to ask most people today, they couldn't tell you exactly who is getting vaccinated. Meanwhile, he added, tens of millions of vials of vaccines were sitting unused in refrigerators. And if that's the case, and this is me talking again, then they're lost. I don't know. But this is also important. Biden also said his administration plans to fully reimburse states for the use of the National Guard for vaccine distribution and that he would launch a massive public education campaign to counter vaccine hesitancy and disinformation, particularly among communities that have been hit hardest by the virus. He said it's a critical piece to account for a tragic reality on the disproportionate impact this virus has had on Black, Latino, and Native American people. The other thing he said he'd do is right off the bat, he's going to enact the the federal the National Defense Program, which will allow us to get manufacturers to make the components for the vaccines to enable the rollout more quickly, because after all, he wants to get 100 million vaccines injected into Americans in his first 100 days in office. And then regarding masks, this was important, I thought. Here's Joe Biden speaking on the subject of masks.
Working with mayors and governors in red states and blue states and require and ask them to require masking up in their cities and their states. Look, I hope we now know this is not a political issue. This is about saving lives. I know it's become a partisan issue, but what a stupid, stupid thing for it to happen.
I think
this is a patriotic act. We're asking you, we're in a war with this virus. And experts saying have shown that wearing a mask from now until April will save as many as 50,000 lives. Quite frankly, it was shocking to see members of the Congress while the Capitol was under siege by a deadly mob of thugs refusing to wear a mask while they were in secure locations. I'm so proud of my congresswoman right here in the state of Delaware, Lisa Brunt Rochester, trying to hand out masks while people are lying on the floor, huddled up, and a Republican college refusing to put them on. What the hell's the matter with them?
Really?
It's time to grow up.
No shit.
Come on, man.
Result? At least four members of Congress to date, including a cancer survivor, now have COVID-19 who are in those rooms.
Yep.
For God's sake, wear a mask, if not for yourself, for your loved ones, for your country.
Yep.
These are real. We'll also be working with mayors and governors in red states and blue states and require and ask them to require
masks. Okay, that's, sorry. I started over again. So he's making a lot of sense, right? Wear a mask. And I have full faith. I believe that once we get Trump and his morons out of office, out of the White House, out of our sights, and we have actual professionals in place, that things will start to get better. And I do believe that hopefully within the next month, after Biden takes office, the vaccines will be rolling out on a regular basis because this guy is just so incompetent, so incompetent. So while we're on the subject of vaccines, I thought I would share with you something that has nothing to do with impeachment or election, has to do with a vaccine. OK, and it's a song. It's a song from a woman who's done a number of parodies, and she's hooked up with Now This News. But this time she's parodying Dolly Parton's Jolene. And, you know, Dolly Parton is sort of a hero among the vaccinerati because she donated $1 million to Vanderbilt University, not knowing where the money was going, actually, to be honest with you. But it went towards the development of the Moderna vaccine. So everyone is sort of saluting Dolly Parton, and Jen Houston does now, too. All right. Take it away, Jen Houston. Not Jolene, but vaccine.
My sincere apologies to Ms. Dolly Parton, right up front. Vaccine. Oh, please don't take this dreaded thing away. Vaccine. Stains. We've got to move on to other things. We can't take much more of this. We need vaccine. Well, Dolly Parton heard our call. She wasted not a moment, y'all. She dug right in her purse for this vaccine. She doesn't care if you're left or right. She dug right in to fight the fight, unlike our so-called leader. And if you think it's due to Trump's warp speed, it's nothing but the grifter's greed that he should take the credit for this vaccine. Vaccine. I hope you stomp this virus out for good. Vaccine. Well, I'd gladly let you course right through my blood. Well, my husband says this song is in poor taste, but all I have is time to waste. My livelihood is nothing without vaccine. And from this day on, when I hear your name, I'll praise that fearless country dame for helping fund this miracle. Vaccine. I'd gladly wait in line for my vaccine. Just tell me where to go get my
vaccine. That is Jen Houston. Yeah, thanks, Dolly. And she's wearing a Dolly Parton t-shirt. Vaccine from Jen Houston. All right. We're in a break now for Progressive Voices. So I thought I'll give the rest of you listening or watching on one of the video feeds or listening to a different stream a little extra something. And the moment I got off the air yesterday, I swear, Founder Singh posted their new video. And lucky you get to see it because, you know, your chances are you're watching. If you might be listening on my stream at NicoleSandlerStream.com or one of the other wonderful stations that carries us, Verdant Square Radio, Netroots Radio, AirProgressive.com, FYI Nation, and others that I'm forgetting about. But you know what you're listening to. Anyway, regardless, it'll work as just a song, but the video is priceless. For those of you just who are only listening or to the podcast, picture Donald Trump sitting on the toilet singing this song. It's called Impeached Again, naturally, and it's by Founder Singh. Take it away, Toilet Trump.
In a few days from now, they're running me out of this town. While everyone else can tweet like hell, big
tech has shut me down. My Mar-a-Lago digs are only fit for pigs. When those Palm Beach hacks left behind my back, it won't matter if I am golfing, but who would want to play with a loser who keeps saying, dear God, I won, but I've been shunned, with only jerks remaining. The long arm of the law just punch me in the jaw, impeached again, naturally. It seems like only yesterday, bashing Mexicans and gays was the way to win, and Rupert Spin convinced me I was on my way. I believed inflated counts, reality shot me down. Giuliani swore I'd be king for sure, even Pence that putts betrayed me, drowning in my debts. I have less than I'm pretending, and Cyrus Vance is on my ass. Immunity is ending, now I don't feel the love, just once was not enough. Impeached again,
naturally.
Impeached again,
naturally.
And now, back to Nicole on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
You know, I try to do that every time without the feedback, and I always invariably push the wrong button. All right, that song is going to stick in your head all day because it did with me last night. Sorry about that. Gilbert O'Sullivan did the original, for anybody who is wondering. All right, we're going to reach out to John Nichols in just a moment, but I've got a few minutes before we get there. So let me tell you the latest. Late-breaking news items to share. Number one, the NRA has filed for bankruptcy. And before you celebrate, I tweeted it out, and somebody said, yeah, it's just a tax dodge. They're moving to Texas. But still, have you heard from Wayne LaPierre lately? Think about it. You know, so yeah, regardless, the NRA is no longer the NRA. Yeah. So good riddance to them. And then finally, Donald Trump, asshole, announced that he's going to leave Washington Wednesday morning, the morning of the inauguration, just before Joe Biden gets inaugurated. And because he doesn't want to go to the inauguration, and that's good because he's not really welcome there anyway. But the other thing is that he is he doesn't want to have to ask the new president for the use of Air Force One. So what he's planning on is leaving the White House, going to Joint Base Andrews, you know, on Marine One, which is the helicopter from the White House to Andrews. At Andrews, Donald Trump wants an elaborate send-off celebration with the feel of a state visit, with a red carpet, color guard, military band, and 21-gun salute. I'm sorry. You just have to laugh because I have a feeling none of those are going to happen because they shouldn't. And come on, come on,
come on, man,
come on, man. Now, Vice President Mike Pence will attend the inauguration. And now we hear that Pence actually called Kamala Harris to congratulate her. You like that? Yeah. Anyway, by the way, the latest, they're still polling, and Donald Trump's polling is now at 29%. It's kind of sweet, just karma, I suppose. All right, let's not wait any longer. Let's get John Nichols on the line because we do have a lot to talk about. And we're doing it the old-fashioned way with a phone. So we'll just call him. John Nichols, of course, of The Nation magazine.
John Nichols.
And there he is. Hey, John Nichols, Nicole Sandler calling.
Hey, Nicole, it's great to hear your voice.
And it's great to hear yours as well. Happy New Year, such as it is.
Well, we're deep into it already, aren't we?
We are.
Kind of crazy.
I know, yeah. Right? So, we are going to talk about the Progressive Honor Roll. We do this every year. You do put this together every year. I just sort of jump on your bandwagon and invite you on my show wherever I happen to be to talk about it. And you have some great progressives that you're saluting because 2020 was a really crappy year. So it's nice to be able to shine a spotlight on some people who deserve praise for the work they did this year. But I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, I mean, John Nichols, Washington correspondent for The Nation, national correspondent for The Nation, the events of this past week, how overwhelming is this? I mean, it's unbelievable. It's kind of believable because it's Donald Trump and I wouldn't put anything past him. But did you ever think you'd see armed insurrection at the Capitol building?
No.
No, right.
To be quite honest with you. Look, Trump, he kind of toughened us up a little bit. We've had 4 years of pretty horrific maladministration, misgovernance, lies, conspiracy theories, cruelty, you name it.
Yep.
So, I mean, we were a little bit prepared for something awful on his exit. But no, it's very funny. I shouldn't say funny. It's odd.
Right.
A week ago Wednesday, when I was talking about this to people and we were sort of preparing to cover the certification of the presidential election results, the electoral college votes and that, I said to folks, it's going to be a little crazy in Washington. You'll have people on the floor of the House and Senate saying extreme things and lying and that. You'll have crowds outside cheering them on and threatening Republicans and, et cetera. But I never for a second anticipated that they would breach the Capitol.
No.
And that you would see the things that you saw that we continue to learn about. So, no, this is pretty close to incomprehensible. But again, it's our new normal. We've wrapped our head around it. And since a week ago Wednesday, had an impeachment.
Again, like a history-making second impeachment, and it happened fast. I got to tell you, I often criticize Nancy Pelosi, but she went at, to use the term, warp speed. Warp speed. That's where it's applicable.
Yeah. And it's the right way to do it. Look, I've written, you and I have talked about impeachment many times over the years.
Yes, we have.
And I wrote a book about it, and dare say I think I know a few things about impeachment. And I can tell you that one of the biggest problems of the modern era is that impeachment has been fetishized. It's been seen as something that is incredibly dangerous and incredibly complex and very difficult to do. And what Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats realized and acted upon is the reality that impeachment was created to protect the republic. And if there is a clear and present danger, impeachment can be done quickly. This was nothing that happened on Wednesday of this week in the U.S. House of Representatives was too fast.
No.
There wasn't anything irresponsible about it. It's the appropriate way to use the tool in a moment such as this.
Exactly. And then the question arises, so what happens next? Are you of the mind that, yes, an ex-president can still have an impeachment trial in the Senate even when he's out of office?
There's absolutely no question that an ex-president can be tried once they're out of office. That's an undebatable point. Only people who haven't paid attention to, impeachment lore and impeachment history and the original premises would doubt that. You can be impeached if you accept the benefits of office. And that's that's a term. It's a term that's been associated with it since 1787. Well, any ex-president accepts the benefits of office because you get Secret Service protection, you get a pension, you get, all sorts of other benefits that, help on building a presidential library. And you can just imagine, what Donald Trump would take for that.
Oh, God.
And so there's no question whatsoever that an ex-president can be tried and convicted. You won't be removed in that circumstance.
Right, he'll already be out.
Because you're already out. But then there are many penalties and sanctions that might be associated with it. Remember, this isn't a criminal trial, so all that you see really is the withdrawal of the benefits of office and the protections that might associate with it. But for one, as one example, if you were to be impeached, you could certainly, because of the language of this impeachment resolution, bar him from running for office in the future.
Exactly. But let me ask you this, if that's a good idea, because with Donald Trump threatening to run again in 2024, which to me is absurd, it keeps all the other crazies, the Tom Cottons and the Marco Rubios, from mounting a serious challenge, right? I'd rather him hanging in the wind saying, I'm running, when, you know, he's got no legs.
You know, I understand the political dynamics there, but I do think that in this case, Donald Trump, if he has the ability to say that he is running for the presidency again, he will leverage that to raise money.
Yep. Yep.
To demand a high profile, media presence, coverage, etc.
Yeah.
And ultimately to make himself something of a president in exile or a president in waiting, even if you correctly state that it is exceptionally unlikely that he would be elected again. And so I think we have to sort of step beyond the punditry and step beyond the standard politics and suggest that that is appropriate. It is what the 14th Amendment intended, that those who engage in sedition, those who literally incite insurrection against the country, can be barred from seeking office. I think it's, to my mind, an appropriate penalty, not one you treat casually, because we don't really like to tell people they can't run for office.
Right.
I'm not a fan of term limits.
Right, but then...
I think this is a rare circumstance where it is appropriate.
Now, should he also be held for criminal charges? He incited a riot, insurrection at the Capitol. Others are going to be charged for that. Can't he be?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question that, and of course you have to gather the evidence, right?
You
gather the information regarding it.
Yeah.
And if there is evidence that a court might see as, legitimate for taking a case as regards incitement, even collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
There are many, many laws in regard to that. It's a hard thing to prove, by the way, right? It's a challenging case, and I'm not casual about suggesting it, but I do not believe for a second that the president should be left off the hook. In fact, I think that there's actually a very good precedent to be set there, and that is to hold him to account for his abuses of his bully pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a legitimate thing to examine. We'll see how far it gets. And we also, of course, and I know we don't even begin to have enough time to discuss all this, but we should emphasize that, you know, he's still got a couple of days left in office.
I know.
And one presumes there may well be an attempted pardon.
Oh, a number of pardons. I fully expect him to try whatever he can try, even though he's been warned, do not try to pardon yourself. You'll make it worse. I have no doubt that he will, because he knows he's broken the law. He knows he is... January 20th, 12:04 p.m., someone could come up and slap the handcuffs on him, and probably should, but...
Well, there's also another subtlety to this. There's some subtlety to the pardon politics, if you will. One thing is that if he pardons himself, that is, to some extent seen as an admission of guilt.
That's right.
And from a standpoint of civil liability, people suing him, he could actually face a lot of trouble, a world of hurt there, on the chance that his pardon stood. I'm not sure his pardon would stand anyway, because I think there's all sorts of legitimate challenges to it. But there's all of that, and that's got to weigh on the decision of whether to pardon.
Yeah.
Then there's also the fact that the penalties he faces at the state and local level remain quite severe
and
quite challenging.
Oh, yeah.
final thing I'll just say on this.
Okay.
Look, I think that Gerald Ford, who had a very nice reputation as an amiable guy,
mm-hmm.
really committed one of the great political sins of the 20th century, and that
pardoning
was
Nixon.
The pardoning of Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, things were just sort of left to lie. If Trump does pardon himself, I hope that the Senate and also that good legal minds challenge that pardon and look for ways to knock it down, because I am dubious about whether it's legitimate. I also think I'm dubious about whether it's legitimate to sort of pre-pardon yourself and say you're off the hook for anything you may do.
Right. No, I agree. And the smartest thing for him to have done would have been to resign. He can still technically do it and let Mike Pence pardon him. But the way he's treated Pence in recent days, I don't know that he would. I mean, he shouldn't, but he's
well,
such a...
Well, it would be poetic justice,
yes,
wouldn't it?
Right? Nicole? Yes, it would.
if he handed off to Pence and Pence didn't
said,
do it.
Yeah, so long, sucker.
I think, exactly. I think that relationship is broken.
Oh, yeah.
And although I do want to emphasize here, there's Mike Pence is no hero.
No.
The only thing he has done
is follow the law.
The only thing he has done to a small extent, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's anything but a heroic figure.
Exactly.
I know Trump is so threatening and so awful that, you know, we tend to see any break with him as noble. And I will, you know, I'll give Mike Pence credit for that, and I respect it, but he should have broken a long time ago before more than 300,000 Americans died from COVID-19 in a circumstance that, frankly, if Pence and others had broken with Trump a year ago, we might well have had a much better response.
No
to
kidding.
COVID-19 and so many other things.
Right. And now we're going to move on in just a second, but I'm showing on the video stream a photo of outside of the U.S. Capitol right now, which is filled. It's surrounded by an 8-foot-tall fence set in concrete and filled with uniformed, armed National Guard soldiers. Again, another thing I never, ever thought I would see. And this is what this is the picture Donald Trump left us with, or is leaving us with.
Oh.
And it's sickening.
It's astounding.
It is astounding.
Yeah. And I mean, I heard just today, and I hope my figure is right, that the Pentagon had authorized up to 25,000 troops for inaugural day. It doesn't mean they'll all be on the streets, but that they're at the ready. And so Donald Trump is leaving at a point where, you know, if this was any other country in the world, we'd be looking at it as a country in crisis.
That's right.
Right. A country that where, you know, civil society and political norms had been pretty much obliterated. And we would be hoping for that country, hoping that the new president would be able to repair the damage. But we would look at it with great concern. And I think we do have to look at our own country in that same way.
Yes.
America is a pretty strong, pretty resilient country. And I do think we will make it through this time. But the damage that Donald Trump has done, I mean, they will teach about this hundreds of years from now.
Without a doubt. And it's a very, very sad. Look, I hate my daughter turned 21 this year. This is what she's grown up with for the last 4 years. As she's starting to become aware of what's around us, this is what she's had. So it's just it's horrible. Anyway, I want to talk to you. John Nichols is with us again, national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine. And every year at the end of the year, I guess you corral all the writers and editors over at The Nation and you come up with the Progressive Honor Roll to single out some of the great people who did wonderful work during the year gone by, and especially 2020. Boy, we could use it because not a whole lot could happened in 2020. One thing I love is every year, not only do the honorees change, but the categories change too. So you can mold them to fit the times that we're living in. And you don't have
to do a lot of molding this year, to be quite honest.
No, I'm sure. Well, it was kind of busy. I know I mentioned earlier, it's already the 15th of January. You know, it's understandable. There was a lot going on the end of 2020 and beginning of 2021. But you name the first one out of the box. It's not the Progressive of the Year, but Democratic Visionary Stacey Abrams. I mean, who else?
Yeah.
Right?
No, it was Katrina Vandenhoevel, who's the editor, longtime editor, now editorial director and publisher of the magazine. And I really worked pretty closely on this. And I mean, that was the undebatable one. And remember, we were putting this together even before the Georgia Senate runoff.
Wow.
And so this was simply off the results of the Georgia presidential vote, because this is what Stacey Abrams did a number of years ago. She said, if you shifted strategy, and this is, it's important to understand, this is a historic shift in strategy, away from the long search for the illusory swing voter, you know, right? That supposed voter who might go one way or the other. And instead went to a mobilization strategy that sought to bring new people to the polls from your base, right? To build out your base among people of color, young people, working class folks, and you know, presume that if you could create an excitement, if you could create an energy, you could win anywhere. And she preached that gospel. It wasn't necessarily accepted. It really did require a break for Democrats. And she proved it. She proved it not just in Georgia, but it's important to remember her group Fair Fight has been active in many of the battleground states, including Wisconsin, where she grew up a little bit as a child. And yeah, I know she's always had a certain loyalty to Wisconsin.
Right.
and so the thing to understand is she, this is somebody who didn't just do a good, you know, political mobilization. She had an idea, a vision, and implemented it. And I think it's going to, I would argue that in many senses, it will be a vision that defines the future of the Democratic Party.
Good. It's a winning vision. You go for it, Stacey. And look, people, I know she was criticized for not, you know, running, jumping in one of those Senate races. Well, thankfully, Ossoff and Warnock both won. And she's now really well positioned to take on the governor again next time. And I believe she won the first time, but this time hit it all out of the park. So good on.
Yeah, and I've interviewed. I've interviewed her, and I, you know, I think she wants to be an executive. I think she wants to run something.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think she didn't do the Senate races and why she is, as you suggest, very well positioned to run for governor.
Yeah, that's great. The next one, in so many years we talked, and it seemed like year after year after year, it was like the most valuable senator or whatever, Bernie Sanders always won. And then you retired him for a while because he was always the given. He's like the elder statesman of the progressives in the Senate. But he's back, the boldest battler. I like that for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. Well, there was a reason for that. It's funny. We actually did kind of retire him.
I know.
You know, always honoring his work, but but recognizing that there are other people and you wanted to highlight others. And we really thought hard about doing that this year. But then at the end of the year, after this incredible year for Bernie Sanders, when he was briefly a presidential front runner, didn't get the nomination, but provided tremendous support for Biden and really, I think, did a lot to pull together the Biden victory or to assist the Biden victory.
I agree.
You know, then he closes out the year in this epic battle for the $2,000 check, which highlighted so many of the economic issues and frankly, the social issues related to the pandemic. And it just seemed that, you know, it would be a lie to suggest that there was anybody fighting harder than Bernie Sanders on so many fundamental issues for working class Americans. And so that was how he earned the title once more.
Absolutely. And so deserved. We love Bernie. And, you know, he's the man. You got a couple of awards for a couple of members of the squad. Ilhan Omar, you award with the House's Systemic Changemaker. I like that. And Rashida Tlaib, Expanding Civil Rights Protections. Cool. Yeah, because they too are deserving. And the squad now looks like it's growing exponentially. I mean, there are a few new members. I don't know if they're official members yet, but we have a few new members of the squad as of a couple of weeks
Jamal
ago.
Jamal Bowman. Jamal Bowman. Corey Bush has really hit the ground running.
Great.
Marie Newman and others. Mondaire Jones. And so, look, there's no doubt that this concept of a squad challenging the status quo has really taken off. And the reason that we highlighted Ilhan Omar is, as the systemic changemaker, is that's really how she approaches so many issues. She, whatever's happening, even urgent, immediate challenges. And remember, George Floyd was killed in her district, right?
Yep.
She always recognizes kind of all the patterns, all of the challenges, all of the issues that are in play. And you know, even in the immediate aftermath of George Floyd's death, George Floyd's killing, she was talking about all of the economic and social and racial justice issues that underpin systemic racism, as well as the political issues related to it. And it was just, she was at her very best throughout the year. And of course, Donald Trump hated that, despised it. And so he focused on Minnesota. He tried very hard to win Minnesota, rallied there many, many times, and he always attacked her. And the interesting thing was, he attacked her, but she was the one who organized militantly on the ground in her district brilliantly and boosted turnout, did a lot to boost turnout in the Twin Cities area, particularly in her district. And Trump didn't win Minnesota. In fact, Biden swept it.
Wow.
A real boosted turnout from the area where Ilhan Omar is most prominent. And I guess the lesson I would suggest there is that obviously Joe Biden won the presidency. No question of that.
Right.
And Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will take office on January 20th. But Ilhan Omar had a little fight with Donald Trump this year. And she won as well.
Absolutely. John Nichols is with us from The Nation. We're going over their annual progressive honor roll, which is a little late this year, but that's okay. They have good reason. They have an excuse from the teacher. We're not going to be able to get to everything, obviously, because we spent some time talking about the craziness we're in. So I want everyone to know that I will post a link to the article at The Nation on the blog at NicoleSandler.com, where I post today's show, and you really should read the whole thing. But there are a few more that I definitely want to get to as we go down the list. One that I came upon it, and I'm like, yeah, because you call it authors of a new vision, but three amazing women who've all been guests on this show. Jennifer Taub has only been here once, but Zephyr Teachout and Stephanie Kelton have been guests multiple times over the years, and I adore them. These are smart, brilliant, amazing women who you put them in their own category, authors of a new vision. They all had books out this year. Stephanie's, of course, The Deficit Myth, which I have right on the floor right next to me. Zephyr Teachout's Break Them Up. And Jen Taub was Big Dirty Money. Why'd you put the three of them together?
Well, they each could have had their own honor, let's be clear. But I thought that it was such, they're almost a squad unto themselves.
Yeah,
they
no
are,
kidding.
These great intellectual leaders who are, you know, really pushing out the limits on how we think about the use of government and the use of the power that you get when you win control of the presidency and the House and the Senate. And frankly, what they're talking about goes to the heart of systemic change. And so I thought that they intersected in a very good way. And it just seemed a good way to, you know, instead of picking one book, which we often do, and certainly that's a commendable thing, a commendable approach, it just seemed to me that I couldn't pick between the three of them. I thought all three were so important that it was just worthy to honor the trio.
Right. And I got to say, so I tweeted out a little while ago as sort of a tease that we were going to be talking about this today. And I was responding to a Jen Taub tweet, and I said, you, Zephyr Teachout, Stephanie Kelton are named in the nation's 2020 Progressive Honor Roll. I'll be discussing with you at Nichols Uprising today. I'm proud that all of you have been guests on my show. And all three of them, you know, retweeted it. And they're on top of it. They're just brilliant women. So I'm glad that they got some attention here. You didn't single out a media person. Usually there's like a TV personality or a podcaster or something. None of us made the cut this year, huh?
No, you all made the cut. The problem was there's spaces to challenge, to be quite honest. No, it's, you know, it, that I I really wrestled with that because there's so many people to honor. We could have honored you for your great long-term service and many of the people that you work with have worked with. So, yeah, it wasn't so much a lack of desire to do it. Frankly, there were so many people. It was such an awful year.
Yes.
And there were so many people, frankly, working in the political sphere and in the organizing sphere that we wanted to highlight that I guess it's safe to say we decided that we'll just have to have double the media categories next year.
That works. All right. I'll give you that one. You end with a couple of musical categories, and I wanted to end there.
Yeah.
Let's start with the last one, because I don't even know this one. Janelle Monáe, and it's out of my musical wheelhouse, but I know who she is, and she's very talented. You wrote a song, Turntables. You wrote, "It ignites with the singer's call for a different vision with a new dream and this promise. We kicking out the old regime," written for Stacey Abrams' voting rights documentary, All in the Fight for Democracy. So that's cool.
Yeah. And I just recommend to people, it's called Turntable. And I really recommend Google it, see the video. The video starts with a James Baldwin quote. It's just brilliant stuff.
Yeah. It looks, I'm curious and I will go check it out. I already checked out the album that you mentioned, the category you name is Music That Shall Overcome. I didn't even know this album existed. And I'm the former disc jockey. I'm the music person here.
Sure.
Long Time Passing, Kronos Quartet and Friends Celebrate Pete Seeger. Tell us about this record. This is fascinating.
Oh, it's so good. And obviously you have Kronos Quartet, which is, incredibly brilliant, classical, but very adventurous group of players. And here they brought together some of the most able young singers. And there are performances on this album that will literally blow your mind because they are so... They're in the spirit of Seeger. Many of the songs are Seeger songs.
Right.
But there are also some songs by others. And they speak very much to the moment. The folks in Kronos Quartet, and this is Kronos Quartet is really a huge, musical entity. They're highly regarded and always, the great concert halls of the world. But they wanted to make an album this year, and they were quite blunt about it. They wanted to make a political statement. And so they went to Pete Seeger, to his music and to people inspired by his music, and created, just an incredibly powerful vision that is not just critical of Trump, but also very, very starkly aware of the times that we are in, the challenges that we face, especially as regards racism and economic inequality, but also hopeful.
Yeah.
And as you listen to the music, you come away with a real sense of possibility. It's a beautiful piece of music.
Well, I thought, because I saved this for last, that we would go out with one of the songs. So do you have a suggestion or request, as it were?
Oh, my gosh. There's one song that I highlight that was about the Charleston killing back in Charleston, South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's mentioned in the piece there.
The president sang Amazing Grace?
The president sang Amazing Grace.
Okay.
Yes, it's truly beautiful, beautiful performance.
All right, then we will go out with that. And the singer on this piece, you say, is an Ethiopian-American singer, Meklit. And so that's who we'll be listening to in just a moment. John Nichols of The Nation. We have what, 4 days and some hours left. Let those days go by quickly and uneventfully, and let Joe Biden and Kamala Harris come in and a new beginning, and let us start healing as a nation. That's what I want from this new year. It's what we desperately need. And, I thank you so much for the work you do and your colleagues at The Nation magazine, because you provide an invaluable service to us all.
Well, you honor us, and thank you for the work that you do. It's so vital to have independent and alternative media, especially with people as informed and
good-spirited as you are.
So, oh, thank you so
carry
much.
Carry on, Nicole.
And you too, John Nichols. And I will talk to you soon. Thank you again. And I'm going to leave everyone with the president sang Amazing Grace from the album Long Time Passing, Kronos Quartet and Friends Celebrate Pete Seeger. Here we go. I think it would help if it would play. Okay. Let's try this again. I gave this whole big build up, right? And now it doesn't want to play.
You've done brilliantly.
I know. You can I'm a professional disc jockey here. Why won't it play? I'll tell you what. I'm going to bring it up on the other computer because this one doesn't want to work. For the people on Progressive Voices, if we go out before the music comes on, I promise I will post a link. I'll put a like a Spotify playlist or something on the blog so you can listen to it because it's really quite brilliant. I have no idea why that wouldn't play. So we'll try it from here if it will allow me to do so. I have no idea. This, you know, I love it when I do a big build-up for something and then I screw it up at the end. This is what you call a professional radio person. All right, here
it's
it is.
What you call live radio.
It is. It is absolutely live radio. Let's try it from here. Ah, okay. Will this play? I'm stunned. You know what? Monday, I'm going to come in with this song. Thank you, Progressive Voices. Thank you, John Nichols. I'm mortified.
Don't be mortified. You've done wonderfully, and you're just so great.
Oh,
carry
boy.
On.
Thank you, John. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Okay, solidarity. Right.
You okay. Too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so there's John Nichols. I'm not leaving yet. I mean, we're off of Progressive Voices. I am going to make this song play if it's the last thing I do. Why won't this work? That's that. This is this. Play the damn song. The president sang Amazing Grace. And it's playing. Oh, I see what I did. Here we go. I'll let it play. Thank you, everyone. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. I'll see you Monday. This is, damn it, the president sang Amazing Grace. Bye.
A young man came to a house of prayer. They did not ask what brought him there. He was not friend, he was not kin. But they opened the doors and they let him in. And for an hour the stranger stayed. He sat with them and he seemed to pray. But then the young man drew a gun and he killed 9 people, old and young. In Charleston of June, the mourners gathered in a room. The president came to speak some words, and the cameras rolled, and the nation heard. But no words could say what must be said. President sang Amazing Grace. The president sang Amazing Grace. We argue where to lay the blame, on one man's hate or our nation's shame. some sickness of the mind or soul, and how those wounds might be made whole. But no words could say what must be said for all the living and the dead. So on that day and in that place, the president said, my president said,